So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. To begin the program today, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we're going to be talking about pediatric voice disorders with a couple of guests. Dr. Scott McMurray, associate professor and pediatric otolaryngologist. Dr. Nathan Wellum is speech pathologist. They both reside in the Department of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery at the UW-Madison Hospital and Clinical Services Center. So really happy to have them with us today to talk about hoarseness in children. Sometimes it's not a serious problem. Other times it can be a very serious life-threatening problem. And we certainly invite your questions as we move along today. And you can join us if you're in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Elsewhere, it's 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us. And the email address is talk@wpr.org, and we'll be happy to get your input as we move along here today. Really happy to have you listening in. Dr. Scott McMurray, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for having us on the show to talk about pediatric voice disorders.
You bet. Dr. Nathan Wellum, thank you so much for being with us as well.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
How many, does this affect a lot of children, hoarseness? Maybe I'll turn to Dr. McMurray first.
Sure. You know, it affects more people than you think. And there's probably more than a million children out there in the United States that have some problems with their voice. Mm-hmm. You know, problems with your voice can come in a variety of different strains or severities, all the way from just having a little bit of hoarseness to where they have significant problems with the voice, so the communication is a problem.
And that affects about a million people a year, a million children a year, you're
right.
Saying. What causes the problems typically? Maybe Dr. Wellum, go to you for that to begin.
Well, that's a great question. There's a wide range of reasons that a kid could be hoarse, ranging from, and we'll probably get into them on the show, a paralyzed vocal fold or vocal cord that isn't moving well and isn't able to work well to make voice, or some kind of growth or lesion on the vocal fold, such as nodules or something like papilloma, all through to consequences of using the voice in a not great way and screaming or causing trauma to the tissue, and then there's some reaction and inflammation, and then the voice has changed because of that too. There's a whole range of reasons why a child may have a voice problem.
And if a child has that kind of problem, is it important, Dr. McMurray, for parents to get their children in to see a physician, an otolaryngologist?
Well, we think that it is, and there's several reasons for that. One is to rule out the bad things that one might have. And fortunately, those are very few and far between and relatively rare. Papilloma, which is a wart on the larynx, can grow and cause you to have some problems with breathing. It's a relatively rare problem, much less common than, say, nodules. Nodules would be the most common cause for hoarseness in children. So we need to make sure that they don't have the bad things that we might worry about. And then once we see what's there, then we can treat them and try to help them out. The problem with having hoarseness is that people have preconceived notions on what they hear. It's, you know, you're listening to me on the radio. You mm-hmm. have a notion as to what I look like. And yet, you know, it's probably going to be different than actually what I look like. And so when people hear them, they'll have some preconceived notions and maybe some judgments that they, you know, may not necessarily deserve to have.
And is there any genetic component to any of this?
Well, that might be a good one for Dr. Wellum, the proteologist.
It's a good question. We're only beginning to understand the ways that genetics and predisposition plays into some of these problems. But in some cases, definitely.
Jim Packard was telling me something or mentioned something about stridor. Is that correct? Stridor?
Stridor is a term that we use to refer to noisy breathing because of air passing past through the vocal folds and creating some noise or turbulence during breathing.
So like that?
Yeah, or?
Okay.
There's an example of stridor when I was breathing in just then. And we are very interested in stridor because it can indicate problems at the level of the larynx in kids and adults.
So if a child has something like that, or even an adult has something like that, that's really cause to get in and see a physician.
We would want to understand the reason why anyone has noisy breathing, and there are a number of things to consider in a differential diagnosis and rule out. Obviously, anyone who has asthma may have noisy breathing, but a different kind of noisy breathing, wheezing coming from the lungs, which is a little different than stridor coming from the voice box. Hmm. We would want to tease out some of those things and understand the reason. But yes, it's important for someone to be seen, I would say.
Yeah. And Jim mentioned something about paradoxical stridor. What is paradoxical stridor?
I'm thinking he's talking more about paradoxical vocal cord motion, or which can happen oftentimes in our teenage population, often in very athletic and accomplished girls, but can also occur in boys. And it's when the vocal folds seem to come together when they shouldn't. So you're exercising, you're competing, and you're trying to breathe, and the vocal cords should be very open, mm-hmm. and they decide that they should come together. You'd think that your larynx, the prime function is to generate sound so that we can have speech, but that actually is the last of its function, the least of its function, and its prime function is to keep noxious things out of your lungs, because if your lungs get trashed, you can't breathe. If you can't breathe, you can't live. So its rudimentary function is to keep bad things out of the lungs. So you're out on the court, or out playing, out competing. You're all tuned up, you're charged up, you got the adrenaline flowing, the larynx is all ready, and so it for some reason wants to come together, and it can make it difficult to breathe, so it's hard to get the air in. And fortunately, through the speech pathologist, once we've made the diagnosis of this, we can teach the person how to take control of their larynx so that when that seems like it's happening, they're able to break it and they're able to breathe.
So you can actually take control of your own larynx?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
That sort of fascinates me, because it seems like something. I mean, I guess our mind can control a lot about our body, and we can train our minds to control our larynx.
Yeah, this is often this paradoxical vocal fold or vocal cord motion kind of problem is a very frightening thing for a child or a teenager or adult who experiences it, because you have the sensation of the larynx closing up, the little space that you breathe through closes up, and people often feel ear hunger. And it's natural to panic when you feel that you can't get enough ear. So there are a number of exercises and a training program that we use to allow someone to open up the airway every time voluntarily and regain control of the passage of breathing.
You know, a few semesters back, I had a couple of football players on in my radio class that I teach, and they're big guys, and you expect a big guys to have a big booming voice. And I noted that in their cases, both their voices were kind of high pitched and different from what you would expect. Is there a difference in the pitch of the voice depending on the size of a person, or does that make no difference at all?
As a general rule, a large person will have a larger larynx, longer vocal folds, and a lower voice. But there are always exceptions, of course. And so the difference in size accounts for some of the difference between men and women, for example. It's very interesting, because boys and girls often have very similar pitches of their voices. And once they pass through adolescence, the male larynx grows to be much larger. The pitch drops as we go through puberty. And there is a pitch drop for females too, but not to the same degree.
You know, and with a four-year-old at home, and there's a birthday party tonight for the daughter, and there'll be lots of friends there. And I hadn't thought about that before, but you're right. I guess the pitch of her friend's little boyfriend's pretty close to her own pitch as a four-year-old. Dr. Scott McMurray, Dr. Nathan Wellam, our guest today from the Department of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery at the UW-Madison Hospital and Clinical Sciences Center. Glad to have them with us today as we talk about pediatric voice disorders. You can join in with your questions or comments. Maybe you have a son or daughter with an issue you want to talk about, or a grandchild. Or maybe just have a question in general about the subject. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Maybe we could talk, Dr. McMurray, a bit about some of, before we take some calls here, about some of the more dangerous or malignant or life-threatening kinds of issues. Can you talk about some of those for us?
Sure. You know, fortunately, malignant cancers of the larynx are really very rare in children. Probably the most life-threatening thing that we come across would be the papilloma, so warty growths. If you think about a wart on your finger, if you can imagine having a wart on your larynx, it can cause airway problems. Oftentimes it presents first as hoarseness, and so that's why we like to look at children who are hoarse to rule that out. And the problem with a wart is that it's caused by a virus, and it's difficult to control the virus. We don't have any good antiviral medications for the warts that grow on the larynx, and so they can grow, and they can continue to grow, and they will grow periodically. And the problem is they can cause airway issues to the point where it's life-threatening. And so what we need to do is go in and remove the warts, whether we scrape them off or use a laser to vaporize them to control their growth. And then often in children, they will just continue to grow. And then something happens to the immune system where then the body's able to control it, and then the growth tails off. So that's probably the most common significant or life-threatening problem that we would run into in the larynx.
And so sort of a surgery then is recommended in situations like that.
Absolutely.
Well, we'll take some calls here and see what's on people's minds. Barb in Tomahawk, I believe, is up first. So let's go to Barb. Barb, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question. My aunt is 97 years old, and she has, this summer she got laryngitis, and she had an infection in her with her vocal around her vocal cords, and she can't talk now. And it's been 2.5 months, and she's had therapy, and I just don't know. Is there any hope for her?
A little older than an adolescent here that we're to be talking about, but that's all right. Let's turn to Dr. McMurray
I'm sure she's a very young 90-year-old. And, you know, the problem with trying to give treatment advice is not really knowing the exact diagnosis. There is definite hope only in that, you know, we should get her in to have someone look at her larynx to see exactly what's causing the problem. Sometimes with infections, there can be problems with a paralyzed vocal cord. And so we would need to assess that and address that. And the other is there may be some kind of a growth or a cyst that would be on the vocal cord that they may be able to help her out with. So, yes, there is hope, but I would think that she would need to see an otolaryngologist, probably not a pediatric otolaryngologist, but an ear, nose, and throat person who could look at the larynx.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Jim in Randall Lakes, your turn now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I have a strange problem. I'm not a pediatric. I'm 76 years old. But for the last couple of years, sometimes when I'm talking, my voice goes into a falsetto, and I can't do a darn thing about it.
Oh, wow. What would cause, Dr. Wellum, what would cause a voice to change? And I suppose that could happen in children, too.
Well, of course, we see those kind of changes in children when they go through puberty, but this is a different kind of problem, obviously. And again, it's hard to know for sure what is going on here. Sometimes there are certain kinds of problems with control of pitch in the larynx that happen in adults that we can evaluate more carefully in our clinic. Sometimes certain changes happen to the voice as we get older, and there are ways to treat that as well with voice therapy. And we work with a lot of older adults who have changes in their voice but still have demands and requirements that need them to work on technique. So it's hard for me to say for sure if it's an issue of that nature. But again, an evaluation would be very helpful in understanding the problem.
You know, as we get older, and I'm getting older as well, you know, things seem to atrophy a bit. And although my adult colleagues, they call it a senile larynx, I always love that. You know, there can be a little bit of atrophy, or the vocal folds just aren't quite as bulky. Oh. So there could be some air escaping out when it shouldn't. And it may be his body's trying to compensate for that by tightening up the larynx, and that would increase the pitch.
Mm. Precisely.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Dr. Scott McMurray and Dr. Nathan Wellum are guests today from the UW-Madison Hospitals and Clinical Sciences Center as we talk with them about pediatric voice disorders. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking voice disorders today with Dr. Scott McMurray, Associate Professor and Pediatric Otolaryngologist, Dr. Nathan Wellum, Speech Pathologist, both in the Department of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery at UW-Madison Hospital and Clinical Sciences Center. Glad to have them with us. Give us a call if you have a question for them at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Stephanie in Madison, you are next. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi, Larry, and hi to the docs. I have kind of an off-the-wall question, and by the way, I hope that was not disrespectful, but I'm kind of an informal person. Anyway, I love babies. I used to work as a cuddler, and I'm wondering, I've had to ask the nurses this question, if you can tell the sex of a baby, if, like, little baby boys have, like, little baby boy voices or, boy boy cries, and little baby girls sound like little girls. And same would go, I mean, the pitch is the same in little kids, but can you tell, little boy voices versus little girl voices? But I'm especially interested in with babies.
Yeah.
Right, that's a great question. And actually, I think if you have a more trained ear, you may be able to, but on average, I would say no. The larynx in both genders looks very much alike at a very young age, and it's not until we go through the changes of puberty where the male voice lengthens and the vocal folds lengthen, thereby giving them a deeper voice. Now, we think about the voice and we think, the voice box or the vocal cords is giving us all the sound. But the actual sound that you hear from my voice is also being shaped by the rest of my head and mouth, kind of like a guitar. If you think about, a note on a guitar and a note on a ukulele, well, they sound completely different, even though their fundamental frequency may be the same. The sort of getting off on a tangent to your question, in reality, I would say no. I don't think that you can tell the difference between an infant boy and an infant girl. But if there are some changes in the head and all that kind of stuff, then sure, you can tell the difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything with genetics that shapes the voice at all?
Dr. Wellum?
Again, we don't understand these things well, but yes, there are some. We know some things, for example, that some people seem to be built with more robust vocal folds than others, and that the way that the tissue is structured and anchored together in some people, the vocal folds can tolerate more impact stress and injury, so to speak, than others. And so it may be that certain people can use their voice in the same way as others and have no problem, and others may use the voice exactly the same and develop a nodule or have some other kind of problem because of that difference in the tissue and predisposition. We think that's the case, but we don't understand it very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this was a great show, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Stephanie, for calling. Appreciate your call. We will take some more calls here. Mary and Nina, I believe, is next. So let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a great show.
Thank you.
I have a question about my 10-year-old granddaughter. I live on a farm, and when she comes up to visit, we use hand sanitizer, for out with the animals or whatever.
Sure.
And whenever she's around it, at the first exposure, we stopped using it because she said it feels like she can't breathe and she coughs very hard, almost like a reflex cough. Mm. Is that what you were talking about with the larynx closing up in response to a noxious substance?
Absolutely, because, the hand sanitizers are basically alcohol. So if you open up a bottle of isopropyl alcohol and take a big sniff, it'll be an irritant on the larynx. Not so much an allergy, although that's possible, but more an irritant. Be like sprinkling cayenne pepper on your larynx or, when you're drinking, having a little bit of soda go down your throat. And so your larynx's natural response is to close off and cough. I think that that's what's going on.
Yeah, I've never been able to drink soda. Do you think that that's why the carbonation? I immediately have difficulty swallowing, so I've never used carbonated beverages because of that.
It could be one of several different things, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's possible. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Mary, for calling. Appreciate it. Laura in Washington Island, it's your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. What can we do for you?
Well, I had a question regarding singing, actually, in adolescence and the development of vocal nodes with improper usage. You know, pop culture and tunes, et cetera, are really prominent, and youth want to imitate that as much as possible. And I was wondering how much permanent damage is done by forcing and straining.
Hmm. That's a great question and a sensitive issue, actually, because there are certain kinds of voices, as you mentioned, that aspiring singers model themselves after. And there are certain kinds of voices that are maybe breathy or rough or what have you, that a singer may have nodules or some lesion or issue with their vocal folds. But in their case, it's part of their voice signature or the characteristic of their voice, and it's not something they want to give up. And it's difficult when you have that model or you have a voice like that where the nodules have a benefit. So for a young singer looking at those people and modeling themselves after that, it's a challenge. But it's important to have good vocal coaching and have a teacher who understands the importance of good technique, because there are ways to safely make a variety of different sounds, whether singing, acting, or just regular speaking, in a way that isn't harmful or as harmful to the tissue.
That's interesting. Thanks, Laura.
Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. Mary from Menasha wonders, what do I do for my 2-year-old son who was born with a high-pitched, hoarse voice?
Well, with the 2-year-old, we'd really need to take a look at the larynx to see what's going on. If it's a high-pitched, hoarse voice, it may be that there is a small web, like the webs between your fingers. The web at the front end of the larynx can be of different lengths, and it may not cause breathing issues, but it may cause the voice to be a little bit higher pitched. So if there was some concern about it, then we'd obviously take a peek at it. Now, to look at it, we would look at them awake, and we have fiber optic telescopes, so little telescopes that are small, and they go inside the nose, and we can look down at the larynx from the backside of the nose and see the vocal folds moving and see how they work. It sounds like a big ordeal, and it is kind of a big ordeal.
I was going to say, how do you do that with a 2-year-old?
Well, you know, 2-year-olds are smart, and you can either talk them into it or you can't. And we are generally able to place this telescope in the nose and take a peek at the voice. We would like to see it functioning, so if they're crying, that's good. In that, not that I want to make them cry, but at least their vocal cords are moving. And we can try to make an assessment as to what's going on at that time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Laura. Appreciate your call again as well. Chris in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 4.5-year-old who at birth had a significant amount of meconium aspirated.
Mm-hmm.
She spent some time in the NICU. When she came into the world, she had what was called N-expiratory grunting, which is continued throughout her life so far. And we've had her tonsils out. She's had swallow studies done. And they mentioned there might be an issue with her epiglottis. But I was just wondering if you knew of any relationship between meconium aspiration, like damaging the tissues in her throat, that would cause the continued grunting. And it's especially worrisome when she's eating, because she can't seem to eat and swallow at the same time. She kind of chokes and gags a little bit. And I was just curious if there was any relationship that you knew of or any recommendations of where to go forward.
Sure, and that's a great question, and unfortunately a very complex one to try to get into. Grunting is a great way for the body to try to keep the lungs open. So your lungs have these tiny little air sacs all the way down at the end that need to be open so that you can get air in and out. And by grunting, you're keeping some positive pressure in your lungs, so you're keeping the balloons blown up so that all of the little alveoli can be open. So that may be her way of trying to keep all of those little air sacs open, as opposed to a true problem with the larynx itself. So it would really kind of depend on her lung status and how good her lungs are and how much injury there was when she was born. You know, and we talk about voice, we think about the voice box again, but really you need good breath support. If you think about the opera singer who's, you know, always working on that huge head of steam so that they can really belt it out all the way up to the level of the vocal folds. And then, you know, beyond that, where we're trying to shape the sound as it's coming out. So I don't know if that's helpful, but I think we'd need to look at her from a variety of different ways, from a pulmonologist to an ear, nose, and throat to perhaps a gastroenterologist to help us with the swallowing issues too.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. So it's a team approach there from the sound of it. Karen and Baraboo, you are next. Hi, Karen. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, this question may be related to the last question, and it's not a pediatric issue, at least not at this point, but I have a 23-year-old daughter who has developed a pretty low, gravelly, hoarse voice gradually over the last few years. And we've had a lot of, she's also had a lot of vomiting associated with this change. I'm concerned about difficulties in her esophagus from that. She's had a number of different GI workups done that show nothing. Our next step is endoscopy. But in retrospect, I look back and know that even as a young child, she would, whenever she would get upset, she would often throw up. And I'm just wondering if there's some anatomical thing that could be happening around the epiglottis or something that could be causing this sort of thing, or if you'd have any... if it would be worthwhile not only to see a GI specialist again for an upper GI, but also to see an otolaryngologist.
I think seeing the otolaryngologist would be helpful to look at the larynx, and it's hard to know sort of which came first, the chicken or the egg. It may be that with the vomiting and the reflux that there's been some inflammation on the vocal folds that then may help induce nodule formation. And so it may be contributing, the reflux and the vomiting may contribute to her gravelly voice. Be harder for me to relate backwards and say that the hoarseness was causing the vomiting, although then it depends on what the larynx looks at. Do you have something, Nathan?
I think you make a good point, and this case brings up the fact that acid really is very noxious to the larynx and can cause a lot of damage. So it is worthwhile, I think, again, with this kind of problem, looking at a team approach and having the ear, nose, and throat or voice team and the gastroenterologist looking at all of this together.
So, and that was actually another question someone else had, is does acid reflux have an effect on the larynx? And it sounds like it does.
Absolutely, definitely for children, which we're talking about kids today, but also through adults. And it's one of those things that a long time ago was not appreciated at all as a contributor with voice problems, but it seems that it ties into hoarseness in a lot of kids, and also ties into this other paradoxical vocal fold motion issue, or the throat closure. We talked earlier about a noxious chemical like the hand sanitizer. And often what happens is when a child is exposed to these noxious events, whether it's a chemical in the atmosphere or whether it's acid reflux coming up from the belly, over time the mechanism gets hypersensitive, and almost anything will make it close down. And then you have these throat closures that are not associated with anything else and are not under control. And that's when it really becomes a problem, and we see a lot of these patients.
Well, I was wondering about acid in drinks. You know, kids, you know, that might drink a lot of soft drinks that would have some acid in it, I would expect. There are even acid in certain fruit drinks. Could that have an impact too much of a cola, let's say, that...
Absolutely. The acid that we take into our body is a big factor in reflux. And so when we're managing these problems, it's not as simple as Dr. McMurray prescribing a medication. It's really a lifestyle issue of looking at what am I eating and when am I eating it? Because, again, we're prone to at least gastroesophageal reflux when we're lying down, so eating late at night is not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
There's other stuff that also comes up from your stomach. You know, the stuff in your stomach is to digest and eat things that you eat, and so that stuff that reflux up is also trying to eat you, so you're dissolving your own larynx when you have some reflux.
Oh, not a pretty picture. Don in Sparta, hi to you. Thank you for calling. Don, are you there?
This is Sean.
Oh, Sean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I got a question for you guys. Thanks for taking my call, I guess. For the last 2 years, I've developed, as you can probably hear, a rasp in my voice. And I went to your nose and throat doctor, and he referred me to a specialist who took pictures of my larynx. And you could see on the picture that one larynx was like, or one side was like lazy. It wouldn't fluctuate with the other side. And that he said that's what's causing this, basically told me that it wore out. And I'm wondering what your opinion on that is.
That could certainly be the case. If one side isn't moving as well as the other, it sounds like there's some kind of vocal fold paralysis or paresis, perhaps, which means that the nerve function to that side is compromised. And often can be caused by many things. Sometimes it's a product of age, although if it's just on one side, that's probably less likely. So sometimes a virus can affect and knock out the nerve. Sometimes there are other things we need to think about, a lesion pressing on the nerve and those kind of things. But if you saw an ENT doctor, I assume he would have looked into all those possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a very treatable problem, too. And so there are options to bring the lazy, so to speak, vocal cord closer to the functional one and close the gap and clean up the voice.
And you can sort of hear the two different tones that he had in his voice. It was almost like he had two vibrating sources, and in reality he probably did. One vocal fold was vibrating at one frequency and the other was vibrating another. Mm-hmm. So you had diplophony, or two different sounds. And so the trick is to try to match the vocal folds so that they will vibrate at the same rate.
Mm-hmm. And that can often be done with proper treatments. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. We have some more callers online, but I can't. There we go. Let's go to Donna in Madison next. Donna, hi to you.
Yes, good morning. I have a 13-year-old son who has a history of asthma and still gets a very croupy cough when he gets an upper respiratory infection with Strider. And has recently developed what we think is vocal cord dysfunction. It's been tentatively diagnosed. And I'm just wondering, is there a relationship between the way those vocal cords were responding to an upper respiratory infection? And what's the origin of the vocal cord dysfunction? Where does that come from? Why is it happening right, you know, now as opposed to 5 years ago?
You know, it's a great question, and one that unfortunately we don't have a definitive answer to. Our approach to the problem is multidisciplined again. Generally in our ENT clinic, it's with the otolaryngologist and the speech pathologist. And my role is to make sure that all of the other noxious stimuli that can be there, whether it's postnasal drip or allergy or reflux or other lumps or bumps that can happen on the larynx that might make the larynx more twitchy, are not there. So my role is to treat all of the things that we can medically. And then the voice pathologist help us with exercises that we can give your son so that he can have control of the larynx, so then when it's slamming shut when it's not supposed to, he can make it open up. We work with the pediatric pulmonologist to make sure that the asthma is well controlled, and sometimes it's this paradoxical vocal fold motion is mistaken for asthma, and so people can be treated for asthma for a long time when in reality it's that the vocal cords are coming together.
The first time that he had it, I had him use his peak flow meter, and he was fine. There was no asthma, no problem with expiration. It was on the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you're recommending a trip to the ENT or to the otolaryngologist.
Yes, and also with the speech pathologist. Mm-hmm.
Right.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thanks for calling, Susan in Madison. Your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know you touched on vomiting earlier, but I thought I would just kind of throw our experience out into the mix, because I have had a son with problems similar to another woman who called earlier with very frequent vomiting, allergies, a lot of postnasal drip, large tonsils. And he visited psychologists and ENT people, and he had GI specialists see him. And the only thing that was observed were these large tonsils, and that is not an indication, apparently, alone for removal of the tonsils. Eventually, though, he did start to have problems with breathing at night, and so the tonsils were taken out for that reason, and he's not had problems with vomiting since. So I thought I would just
throw that in.
Reflect that back.
Yeah.
So I may have to weave my way around to coming up to how the tonsils might be causing the trouble, although I don't think it's too difficult, in that the tonsils and the adenoids and live together. Adenoids are like tonsils in the back of the nose, and it can block the progress of mucus. You and I make a quart of mucus a day, and it drips down the back of your throat, and you swallow it, and you don't even think about it. And if the adenoids are large, then it can back that mucus up, and then it'll dribble down on top of the larynx, and it can make you cough. And therein, if you get into these coughing fits, you may have some retching. Sometimes with very large tonsils, you can have swallowing problems. So the tonsils are in the back of the throat, and as you're trying to propel the food back past your larynx into the esophagus so you can swallow it, it can make it hang up or catch it and give you some swallowing problems, and then you can have some gagging and retching that way. I mean, I would agree that, you know, tonsils causing the vomiting would be hard for me to link together except in the circuitous route.
Mm.
And I'm glad that he was helped by having his tonsils and adenoids on.
Yeah, it was very helpful.
Thanks, Susan.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call. Are there some helpful websites or places we can go for information about voice disorders in children?
That's a great question. There is one website that comes to mind that our team was part of developing that is not specific to children necessarily, but we can endorse it because we had input on the information that was placed there, and that is www.voiceproblem.org, and it's very nice, reliable information that has been screened by a number of world-class otolaryngologists and speech pathologists, and it covers different diagnoses and problems, describes common treatments and common options for people. But of course, there is, with many problems, there's no substitute for seeking out a proper evaluation by an experienced team.
Absolutely, and it's Voice Problem without an S, voiceproblem.org?
Correct.
Voiceproblem.org. Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us. I hope we can do this again sometime. I learned a lot, and I think everybody else did too. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Dr. Scott McMurray, Associate Professor and Pediatric Otolaryngologist. Dr. Nathan Wellum, Speech Pathologist. Both reside in the Department of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery at UW-Madison Hospitals and Clinical Sciences Center. Pleased to have them with us today, and we'll probably take this topic up again as we move along here, as we often do. Coming up, we're going to be talking about children living in violence. There's a new exhibit coming at the Chazen Museum of Art at the UW-Madison. I think you're going to be very interested in learning about Michael Kienitz. The photographer connected with that exhibit is our guest next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.